We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Showtime. How y'all feel?
You got your popcorn ready.
On three. One, two, three.
This is Wichita's Sports Daily with Bruce Hurdle and Shane Dennis on Sports Radio KFH. 1240 AM, 97.5 FM.
All right, welcome back into second half.
Welcome back.
Sports Daily. Jed Chambers producing the show. There's, you know, continuing our theme from the end of the first hour, the great thing about this discussion that's about to ensue is that you could actually come up with about four or five other documentaries that would be maybe, arguably, just as compelling as the four that you've even laid out. And that underscores the absolutely tremendous and maybe surprisingly tremendous history of athletics there are at Wichita State and before that, Wichita University. It's unbelievable, really, when you get right down to it, that there are so many different options, and including the four very, very good ones that you laid out in our Cindio Twitter question of the day.
Yeah, if you just joined us last segment, the Cindio Twitter question is, if there's a multi-part documentary about WSU athletics, which team do you want a deep dive, inside access, tell-all about? And that's the important stuff, you know, because, for example, the 1970 football team, there has been a film about it, and I can vaguely recall going to watch not a sneak preview, but a private showing quite a while ago. And we go to the KFH radio hotline and get the ultimate judge of what would be Doc worthy in Shocker sports history, voice of the Shockers, Mike Kennedy. Hi, Mike.
Hey, Mike.
Hi, guys. How are you?
We're well.
Good.
Floated out a Twitter question that if there's a multi-part documentary about WSU athletics, what team do you want a deep dive, inside access, tell-all about? A la The Last Dance, without the Michael Jordan slant, of course. The 70 football team, the 89 national title baseball team, or the two Final Four teams? We'll start with the 70 football team. What in stuff that you don't know, if there's anything, and maybe this is a bad call because maybe you know it all, but what do you think we need to be aware of or that we'd be most fascinated to find out about, starting with the 1970 football team?
You know, on that one, I think that so much has been done. I don't know if there's much left that hasn't been told. Channel 8 really did an excellent documentary about the crash and all of that. And, you know, I honestly was hesitant about that happening at first, because I think it's a subject that deserves so much respect, and I thought they did a beautiful job with it. And there were things that came out that have been part of the story going forward, like the involvement of the Alpine Rescue Team, the young men that were set up, and John Putt in particular, who was interviewed in the documentary and has become over time since then kind of a part of the Shocker family. For his involvement. So I think that some of those things that were not very well known came out in that. So while it is a worthy subject, I don't know if there's as much left there to tell as maybe there would be on a couple of others.
Yeah, that's fair. Mm-hmm. That's fair.
Agreed.
Agreed. Okay, how about the 1965 Final Four team? Let's go there.
That's an interesting story, simply because You know, you had the unusual circumstance of losing two great players at the semester. One, you know, Dave Stallworth running out of eligibility and Nate Bowman becoming ineligible. And the team the year before was certainly a Final Four worthy team that got upset on its home court by Kansas State in the regional final. So all of that makes it a fairly interesting story. And then after losing those guys, for that team to come together, win the Missouri Valley Conference, win the regional and go to the Final Four, and with a starting five that was all from within about whatever 50 miles or so of Wichita, McPherson, Newton, you know, Wichita guys. So all of that makes for a pretty interesting story, and certainly that would rank up there with consideration.
All right, what about the 89? I mean, that's a no-brainer. That's the national championship team, and enough time has passed that it makes it even maybe more compelling, because maybe some of the details by folks have been lost to time or to memory. But that's a no-brainer. Anytime you win a national champion, you can always revisit that story, can't you?
Absolutely. And I think what you just mentioned, Bruce, I think that there was a lot. We did a pretty good video about that season right afterward. And there were some, you know, a lot of stuff was in there. But I don't think that, I mean, it's hard to believe that that's been, what, 31 years ago? There are a lot of current fans that I don't think really know that story as well. And there, to me, that was when Shane just texted me and asked my opinion. That was, to me, that's probably number one. That would be my first choice for the documentary. There were so many interesting little stories. Jim Newland's development from where he was as a freshman to the dominant closer in all of college baseball, the personality of and leadership of Eric Wedge, the development of Greg Brummett into the pitcher that he was, all of the, you know, the injuries that they dealt with down the stretch, the emergence of Mike Wentworth, a walk-on who hardly played, as a guy who hit two incredibly key home runs in that title run. To me, there's a lot there that makes for an interesting story, a really fascinating story. And then also the motivation from the beginning of the crushing loss the year before the game to get them to the championship. They lose a heartbreak at Arizona State and then just get crushed the next day, and how that was a motivating factor for that 89 season. I think there's a lot of good stuff there that people would enjoy.
Shocker voice, Mike Kennedy joining us. And I think one of, maybe not an entire episode, but you kind of just mentioned Mike Wentworth in passing with the bazooka bubblegum messages and hitting home runs on his folks' birthday. And all the games, Mike, and you were there, all the elimination games. Like, if they lose, it's over. How many times they had to win and did, and with, Lansing was out, Wentworth was basically walking around on one leg.
Bonaquista had been lost.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, just you could do an episode on the regional in Fresno. And how they were 2-0 and then lost to Michigan and have to turn around in just a couple of hours and play the host team, Fresno State, with three or four major leaguers on their roster. A quick turnaround and to win that game and then get back and beat Michigan twice the next day. I mean, it was an incredible run. And like I said, there are a lot of little sidebar stories. There's a story, I've never confirmed this, but the kind of thing that makes it fascinating, that in that Fresno State game, Wedge was coming up, and they changed pitchers, brought in a relief pitcher, and Wedge supposedly walked back to the dugout and said, "What's this guy's name?" And somebody told him and said, "Why?" And he said, "I like to know the names of guys I go yard against," and then proceeded to hit a home run. And they were salaming in the dugout as he crossed home plate. So, I mean, just
well, that's the
like
Crash
that.
Davis moment, I mean, is what it is. It's the Crash Davis. I'm going yard on this guy. Okay, Mike – as kind of the unofficial historian of Wichita State sports, Wichita University sports, I've got one for you that I've always thought and I regretted in my time at in Wichita that I didn't circle back to do this. The story of the Johnson brothers, Frank Johnson and Gene Johnson in the 36 Olympics, gold medal winning team, the rise of the Hitler Olympics in Berlin, two Wichita State guys winning or connected to a gold medal winning team in the first ever competition for basketball. It was way before both of ours time, and that's rare that we can say that anymore, but be that as it may, I always thought that that was a remarkable connection to history for Wichita State University.
Absolutely, and I did have a chance to interview both of them upon their induction into the Shocker Sports Hall of Fame, and Gene Johnson was an extremely interesting character. He developed the first ever full court zone press.
Right.
And it came from an experience. He took his team at Wichita U to Mexico for a little summer tour and played a couple of games down there. And they played a team that had virtually no basketball experience. And the five guys on that team just all chased the ball. Wherever they passed it, all five guys ran where the ball was. And he said it was disorganized and it was wild, but it was also kind of disconcerting. And he thought this could be made into something organized, and that's where he got the idea for devising a full-court zone press. And Ralph Miller told me the first thing he did when he took this job was went and looked up Gene Johnson, who by then was coaching at Kansas Wesleyan, and he kind of bounced all over the place. Kind of a maverick and kind of a iconoclastic figure, but he at the time was at Kansas Wesleyan, and Ralph went over and had him show him his own press and how he did it. And then Ralph put that in, and Ralph used that to beat a very good UCLA team in the mid-50s. And it's not mentioned later, but the feeling was that Wooden took note of, and that was an influence on the press, the famous UCLA press that he developed with that smaller team in 64 that won his first national championship.
Kind of a maverick. All five guys chasing the ball. That sounds like an eight-year-old soccer game. And he made that stick, huh?
Well, in the interview, Every stop in his career ended with basically he got screwed on what he was promised to get paid, and he moved on. He went from
wow.
Wichita to he, but he was coaching the he left Wichita U and was coaching the McPherson Globe Refinery AAU team, and it was one of the two finest AAU teams in the country. And his brother Francis was on that team, had played for him at Wichita U. And when they went to pick the first Olympic team, they basically took the two finalists from the national AAU tournament. And that year, McPherson lost to Hollywood studio sponsored a team from Los Angeles. And so those players kind of made up the Olympic team. And the guy who coached the Los Angeles team was the head coach and Gene Johnson, the assistant coach, because his team was runner up for the first Olympic team.
Unreal. You're just crazy.
You know what was a really satisfying part of The Last Dance, and what would be really fascinating if a Shocker team, the subject of our Twitter question, were the curtain was peeled back on, is the opposing coaches and players being interviewed. And that's what I keep thinking about with all of these historic Shocker teams. Like if you did the doc on the 89 team, talk to Bob Warren, talk to Dewey Calmer, talk to, if you could go back in time and talk to Jim Brock,
yeah,
Gary Ward. Can you imagine the comments from, and even the 2013 Final Four team, talk to the Valley coaches that played against that Baker and Van Vliet bunch. To me, that would be just as impressive or fun to listen to as it would be for Greg or Gene or anybody else from the inside of the program to really divulge what it was really like. I want to hear the other side of the, the coaches that had to go through that juggernaut on those teams.
I agree. That would be tremendous. And that's another great part of the baseball story was that Gary Ward got to Oklahoma State at the same time Gene Stephenson got here, but Oklahoma State had the upper hand for a while, and Wichita State lost a couple of frustrating regional finals in Stillwater, and so finally breaking through in 88 and beating them down there to get to Omaha, and then going back to Omaha in 89, it sort of shifted the balance of power in the area a little bit. And that, you know, that was a great rivalry. Gary Ward would, you know, was a, you know, certainly an interesting interview always. And so that was, you know, that's one of the great stories too, just that battle here in the region and the grudge, I mean, almost hatred between the programs, but also the absolute grudging respect between those two very strong-willed coaches.
That would be an episode all to its own, the Oklahoma State.
That would be, yeah.
No doubt.
That would be. I think that that's as interesting a rivalry that, at least in the time that, that I have been around Wichita State since the late 70s, and Mike obviously predates me, I think that's been the most interesting, hard-fought rivalry that Wichita State has been involved at in any sport. Is that a fair statement, Mike?
Well, I think right there with it, you'd, because of its longevity, you'd have to throw in Wichita State Tulsa. And that goes back to racial issues.
Certainly.
With how Linwood Sexton was treated in the, you know, right after World War II, and
right.
That started it. And then, you know, it was always a big deal, even if the teams weren't great. And then it kind of really escalated in the early 80s with Nolan Richardson and Gene Smithson and both teams being really, really good and battling for conference titles. So that one was right there, too. And there was just somehow that was one that that carried over generations, even of Tulsa fans and Wichita State fans, passing down that feeling that we hate that other program. My wife, when she was with the Alumni Association, had a big all-time football reunion, all different, you know, all former players from all different eras, and one of the events was a Saturday morning sort of brunch thing, and they were split up into about four different rooms, just kind of different eras. But the guys started intermingling. They liked kind of going back and forth and talking to guys from different eras, and it was like they'd walk into the room with younger guys or whatever and say, "Did you guys hate Tulsa as much as we did?" And that, so that was like a starting point when shot the football player.
That's pretty funny.
Hey,
Mike, I've got a question for you, and it's just kind of been conjured here in this conversation. For someone like you who has, I mean, left no stone unturned in the history of Wichita State athletics, what would interest you the most? Just right now, if you could have a full four-part series on Wichita State, maybe something off the beaten path, or maybe something that you haven't been able to find out as much about as other things, what would it be for you? A big, small, whatever, what have you?
Oh, wow. That's a tough one. That's a tough one.
I mean, is there anything that even fits into that category for you?
I don't know. I mean, that's took me by surprise there. It's an interesting question, but I don't know. There's nothing that jumps out at me right off the
How about a deeper dive into the history of our athletic directors?
That would be
we've had a few colorful ones.
We've had some.
It would be interesting. Yeah. And just changes in philosophy and in some ways that would almost reflect, you know, just changes in college athletics. You know, honestly, I think one of the things that people have never truly understood, and I don't, you know, I haven't had a chance to really dive into it deep enough to have a great explanation. But I think there's always been a certain feeling that the plane crash led to the end of football, but it was 16 years.
Yeah.
After the plane crash that football was finally terminated. And my own belief is that sometime in the late 60s, early 70s, you look at a school like Nebraska that hired Bob Devaney. Schools like that started expanding their assistant coaching staffs. They put in, you know, weight training became a big deal, and they started putting in, you know, for the time, you know, really bigger, more involved weight rooms and things. And I think Wichita State, although it was a Division I program, kind of missed the boat on that or couldn't afford to do what some of those schools were doing. And that's where the decline really began. In the early 60s, they were still, you know, went to a couple of bowl games and, you know, were pretty competitive. And I think that would be kind of an interesting study, how much that effect came into play. And toward the end, they were trying to pay more for their assistant coaches. Ron Chismar's staff, I mean, those guys had more experience and were getting paid more by far than anybody ever had. But they still weren't winning, and the program was going deeper and deeper in debt, and that was essentially why it was ended. And I think that's a story maybe that's never really been fully told, and to give people a plus. You know, here's the other thing. There's that hardcore of people that love Shocker football and still would like to bring it back. But I think that the perception became in those last few years that while technically they were Division I, it was a different level program than what most people perceive to be Division I football, and especially in comparison with a strong basketball program and a rising baseball program. You know, it just seems small time to people in comparison.
Mike, how close was Wichita State to getting Jim Valvano to come?
You know, from what I've heard, and I know a couple of people that were on the committee, the interview was kind of a courtesy. I don't think he was ever seriously interested for himself, but just wanted to kind of see what it was all about, see where they were heading, maybe even make a recommendation or two, although I don't know for sure if he did that.
A couple more quick ones, Mike. Of the things that you brought up, I had to make some notes here. Do you remember a brawl between Wichita State and Oklahoma State in baseball ever? And if not, how did we avoid it?
I'm trying to remember. One in particular I remember was, I'm almost sure it was Ricky Taylor. Somebody hit a home run, and then Richie Taylor took one in the ear flap. Uh-huh. And that set off.
Oh, we cleared him a few times, but I don't know. We never fought. But I don't know how. As much as we hated one another throughout the years, I don't know how WSU and OSU.
It tended to be Gene and Brent and Gary and Tom Holliday having words at home plate over something, as opposed to the benches emptying. Yeah, I don't know if I recall just an all out bench clearing brawl.
Amazing restraint by all.
I think probably by the coaches keep you butt back there on the bench.
Yeah, do as we say, not as we do, because we're closer to fighting than you players are. The Dave Stallworth semester eligibility rub in 65, did that hurt any other school back then like it did us?
Yes. Now, I don't remember, I don't remember right off the top of my head somebody of quite that caliber, a first-team All-American, but it did happen other places. And the other thing I don't think people are aware of anymore was back then you had a semester-to-semester eligibility situation, and it was not uncommon at all for teams to lose a key player or two because their grades weren't high enough from the first semester in the middle of a basketball season, or hadn't completed enough hours and became ineligible at the end of the first semester. And so that was fairly, just like the Nate Bowman situation. So that was fairly commonplace back then. And Ralph, I interviewed Ralph a number of years later, and he said that the reason, well, there are two things, but the reason that he brought Stallworth on at the end of the first semester, he was losing Laddie Van Eman, who had been a mid-year transfer and ran out of eligibility. The big thing that he hadn't done yet at Wichita State was win a Missouri Valley Conference championship, and he felt like that team really had a chance to do that. And so he brought on Stallworth and Van Eman, or rather Leonard Kelly, at the end of the first semester, was another mid-year transfer from junior college. And then I think the first game that they played, Gene Wiley, who was a future NBA center, tore up his knee. and hobbled through the rest of the schedule, and they came up just short of Cincinnati again in the Valley race. But the other thing he told me was he knew Dave was going to be a good player. He had no idea he was going to be as great as he was, and if he had, he wouldn't have made that move.
So, yeah. And finally, Mike, it just broke about 10 or 15 minutes ago that longtime Jazz coach Jerry Sloan has died at the age of 78. You have a quick Jerry Sloan thought or story?
Somebody, I can't remember who now, somebody that grew up in the Chicago area that I knew, when Sloan played for the Bulls, he was a roughneck. And Brett Musburger at the time was a local sports anchor in Chicago. And I guess he had Sloan on one time and had video of all these little dirty tricks and games that he did and had him watch it with him. Jerry said, "No, I don't do that kind of stuff." So Brent said, "What about this, Jerry? Here, let's look at this." And I guess it was pretty funny, but he was a very good player. He came from, Evansville when he played there. Sure. Was a perennial Division II national champion, and he came from that program. But he was a very good NBA player, but certainly hard-nosed, rough neck. And so some of the things you saw about his Jazz teams in The Last Dance were just a reflection of the head coach, which, of course, a lot of teams are.
Sure.
Well, it was an impromptu out-of-work broadcaster episode 4 with Mike Kennedy. Thanks, Mike. That was awesome. Appreciate you.
It was fun. It's fun to talk
sports for a while. All right. Sounds good.
Thanks, Mike.
Voice of the Shockers, Mike Kennedy. All right, we went long, but it was worth it. When we come back, we'll scattershoot a few things. Peyton Manning and Tom Brady, their handicaps. We're going to find out what they are, and we're going to find out how good a golfer and trash talkers they are this weekend. A little bit of golf talk and who knows what else before we get to OTE, brought to you by Superior Rent. Stay there.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.